Welcome back to Card Knock Life. I'm Corey. He's Daryl.
Yeah, we're doing this thing again.
Because you get paid the big bucks, Daryl.
Ah, fair. I'm a slave to value.
We do it for the money, clearly.
I'm here for the money, dude. Pay me.
And so now all of Modern Masters is spoiled at this point. And so what we're going to get into a little bit today is how awesome this set is. But we're also going to bring it back to Earth a little bit and talk about how, you know, Wizards can do a lot to affect the cost of the game and make it more accessible to players by reprinting cards. But then the players can go and screw things up with all the speculating and all the shit that we like to do.
What we're looking for is dickbaggery.
And there's a lot of kind of like ruthless money making at the expense of the players,
I'm looking at this list that you have.
All right, well, hold on to that list for a second. We're going to get into that, but the audience see the list.
I know the audience doesn't see the list, but I'm saying that if one of these cards is truly at the cost that you say it's at, there's some real fierce dickbaggery money-making going on right now.
Oh, there's some major dickbaggery money-making. But let's not be negative. Let's be positive to start, because we got some great news. And this Modern Master set is juiced. This is like we're making up for last the Modern Masters 2.
So, I look at all these cards, and I'm like, you know, out of all these rares, what rare would I be the most disappointed to open?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, that's never a good practice. but would you be the most disappointed in? Uvenwald Tracker?
It's Uvenwald Tracker or Mind Shatter or Tackle.
Or Sever the Bloodline? Yeah. There are rares that would suck to open.
There are five or six.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of good ones in this set, dude. Like, wowee.
Yeah, the good news is a lot of the bad rares and a lot of the valueless rares have a lot of upside in that they're, you know, like, they're casual players, they're EDH cards, you know, like, yeah. Zealous Conscripts, for example, is, like, maybe a 30-cent card, but good news is it's, like, a bomb in EDH, you know, you're going to play it at least.
Deadeye Navigator?
You spend $10 for it. Yeah, Deadeye Navigator, too. So,
yeah.
They all have some play somewhere. Some of these cards look like odd inclusions, but they clearly have a lot of impact in, like, modern online prices, I should say, not modern.
What do you think?
Online price. I'm thinking like Grafdigger's Cage needed a reprint for sure online. This card was like up at like $20, like a total like necessary evil for like that dredge meta that we had going on for a while. Yeah. And man, it was keeping a lot of people out of
another card
there because $60 with the Grafdigger's Cage on the sideboard was too rich for some of our blood.
Other cards that stick out to me: Stony Silence.
Yeah, that's another expensive one.
Was getting up there.
Yeah.
Entreat the Angels was pretty expensive. Just for Legacy.
Yeah.
Like, to play Miracles, you had to buy Entreats, and they were like $22.
Yeah. Even like Restoration Angel, like a lot of these cards printed at Rare are going to come way down in price. Restoration Angel was like a $7 card online. Now I'm sure it's going to be like maybe a buck, maybe a ticket, you know? Blade Splicer is like a $3 card online.
Pair of cards that we can see at the Rare slot that I bet a lot of people are excited about. Blood Moon and Damnation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Those cards are super, super expensive.
Particularly Blood Moon. What was that? we're looking at like a 30 ticket card online for a while.
Yeah.
Now printed at Rare, we're going to see lots and lots of these opened. Especially with the hype generating.
I'm going to see if the price has gone down on it real quick.
Yeah, check it out. I can't remember what it was actually at. I don't know if that was accurate, 35 tickets, but it sounded about right.
Blood Moon at 22.
Blood Moon at 22 tickets, all right. See, that's affordable. We're getting there. And I think that what I've heard is the rule of thumb on this stuff is about, like, maybe 6 weeks in is when they're actually going to hit their bottom or you know, somewhere around there. But I think the impact on Magic Online is even more immediate. You see a lot of those changes happen much sooner because everything moves so much faster online. There are events happening every day. You know, there are people buying cards, like, instantly. You know, you don't have to wait for shipping. It's like they get delivered by the bot the moment you order them. So those prices can take effect much quicker. So.
All right, so online, So let's see, Online, Blood Moon, peaked at almost 50 tickets last December. It's been slowly on the downtick, though. And as recent as the announcement of Blood Moon and Modern Masters, which I'm going to guess was on the 28th, Blood Moon was a $30 card, and now it's down to 23. And that's just from the Modern Masters Blood Moon. So, I mean, that's a big drop. You know, your Blood Moon's lost 20% of their value.
Yeah.
Does that suck? Yeah, sucks. But I'm completely okay with it.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, right?
Yeah. I don't buy cards on Modo to, like, ship them later. I buy cards to play Modo.
Right, right. You gotta think about the game, and you gotta realize that this kind of thing happens. If you're in it to be making investments on cards, you gotta be prepared for reprints. Don't be disappointed. You know, even like the Wizards has made it really clear that the reserve list is a bunch of cards that are all safe investments. If you want to get involved in it in that level, then that's where you should be putting your money. If you're a player, then you don't care about those things because there are more players that are able to play the game with you. The future of the game is
healthy.
Is looking brighter because there are more people with the ability to play it. But also there are plenty of cards, and I'm sure that most of us don't have access to everything, right? And there are plenty of things that we just don't have yet. And I think that every one of us can take something away from this set thinking, man, I'd really like to get my, my play set of, Stony Silences. And I've been waiting for those to drop in price. And here's my opportunity. So, I don't know many people that have all of their Zendikar fetch lands, and if they do, maybe they need to get their copies online or get their copies in paper, and this is gonna make that much easier to do. So, while you may lose something from this set dropping your prices, you definitely gain some opportunities in that as well. I, for one, am looking forward to getting my Scalding Tarns online for the first time. I've been running flooded strands and polluted deltas in place of those up to this point, and I think finally now. They're down to like $17. Scalding Tarns are.
Yeah.
What do you think, Daryl? What do you think is the bottom on these Zendikar fetch lands?
Bottom on Zen fetches, I think, is probably 15 to 17. Actually, it depends on how widely open Modern Masters is on Modo. Because if you remember back to the KTK release,
yeah,
when fetch lands were getting just busted in drafts, fetch lands, the KTK fetch lands were like $6.
Yeah, they went way down.
Yeah, they like. Because fetch lands were super expensive. So, like, they were $20, $30 to get your Onslaught fetches. But when KTK fetches came out, the fetch price for KTK fetches was really, really low. It was like $3, $4, $5. Or $3, $4, $5 tickets if you don't want to spend real money on digital objects. You know, whatever your poison is. So
yeah.
I'm going to take a look and see what bots are selling KTK fetches for right now to kind of give you that perspective.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how this is going to be compared to those because we've got about a month before the next set comes out after Modern Masters is released. Yeah. Amonkhet comes out really quickly after that. So there's not going to be a lot of shelf life for this one.
Though, not gonna be-
I mean, it obviously appeals to a different crowd.
I think people will go nuts.
I mean, drafting. Yeah. Oh, yeah. People are going to go nuts in drafting it, but it also costs $10 a pack, too. So it's much more expensive. And if there's, you know, like in a lot of cases online, you buy $30 worth of packs and you get like maybe 4 cents worth of value out of those cards. This looks a lot more promising than the last Modern Masters set for the online market. And I know that was like a complaint, like particularly for like Eternal Masters, whereas like a lot of those legacy cards are like really cheap online. This has a lot more to offer the Modo players, and hopefully that will entice some more drafters and get some more of those cards in circulation. What'd you find, Daryl?
They're like flooded strands are being sold for like $9.
Okay.
So they've climbed from the $4 or $5 floor.
Yeah, and those are gonna steadily increase. So from a player's perspective, you're gonna want to have your copies of those now. I mean, obviously, if you don't already have them.
And like, I think that I think I have all of the fetch shit. Like, I think I have my full play set of fetches.
Oh, yeah.
Let me check. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. I'm missing 8, 9, 10. I'm missing a Arid Mesa and a Bloodstained Mire.
All right. Well, good news for you. Bloodstained Mire is pretty cheap. And Arid Mesa has only 9 tickets right now. Scalding Tarn is the most expensive one of the Zendikar.
Yeah, like I bought Scalding Tarns when they're like 25 or 30. But you know what? I bought them with credit, but like at the same time, I don't care if they went
down. Okay. Yeah, it's all right.
I have my play set of Scalding Tarns, and I don't need to buy, you know, 7 play sets on Moto to put them in all my different decks. I just have a play set of Scalding Tarns I can put in everything, and it just works.
Right.
So
right.
I'm okay with this. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Now, I want to say that Scalding Tarns were about 25, 30 bucks last week. Before this announcement. Scalding Tarns are 17 tickets right now. Verdant Catacombs you can get for 13 tickets. These are all card hoarder prices, by the way. Arid Mesa you can get for 9 tickets. Marsh Flats for 5 tickets. And Misty Rainforest for 8 tickets. And I'm looking at that on the 6th. So keep an eye on those. I'm not looking at this from a speculator perspective. I'm strictly opposed to that sort of thing. I'm not saying take advantage of these, buy them up while you can. I'm saying get your play sets as a player so that you don't get screwed later on.
Yeah, take advantage of getting third down so that with 15, you don't have to, like, pull your teeth out and donate your teeth for fetch land. You can just be like, all right, here's my, like, 40 bucks to finish whatever play set, or here's my 60 bucks for my Scalding Tarns that were $100 last week. Cool. Ship it.
In paper, I think you can get the Scalding Tarns for about 50 bucks. Those are, you know, as always, those are the most expensive one. So 50 bucks is pretty affordable for those guys. I expect those to continue going down. I'm thinking that in paper, those could hit like $40.
I was going to say 35 was my floor.
35, 40. But if this gets open in paper as much as like Cons does, which I mean, that would be a long shot, right? Then we've got to expect these to be like $20, right? So, I mean, all those Cons lands hit $15. I don't see why this set couldn't be open the same amount. These are at rare. Why wouldn't they be $20 as well? You know, is it just because they've got that price tag previously of, you know, being so expensive to begin with or what? Because you compare those to, like, the Polluted Deltas, which before the Cons reprints, Polluted Deltas were like $65, $70 in paper.
Yep.
So I take that pretty similarly. I'd say that Scalding Tarns could get all the way down to $20, assuming that this set is actually printed as much as they say it is. What I'm hearing is that there's unlimited supply of this one. We're not going to run out of Modern Masters. Is that right? I mean,
I don't think that's the case. I think it's a higher print run than the other two, but I don't think it's going to be like a set style print
run. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's gonna be the limiting factor, but clearly Wizards is taking the perspective of let's make this affordable to players, and they've done that. They've made that really clear in the rarities that they've put on these cards. I mean, they could have just as easily made these fetch lands mythic rares. That would have felt like a total money grab in those cases, but they're rares. You know, Blood Moon, for example, has the flavor of a potential mythic rare card. It's a rare. You know, that's another one that we want to get in circulation. You know. There's lots of stuff in this set that could have been a mythic rare that they managed to make a rare, you know, or even uncommons that they could have upgraded to rare. Inquisition of Kozlak is back down to uncommon after being printed as a rare in the Conspiracy set. So, someone brought up a point, though, too. If you need to get copies of your, like, uncommons and commons, this is the time to get them. With this set being opened as much as we expect it to be, cards like Path to Exile, which tend to be, like, $6 or $7 cards after this sort of thing, like, shakes out, are probably going to go down as low as, like, $1 or $2. This is a good opportunity to get, you know, your playsets of all of your, you know, your pieces for that sort of thing. Serum Visions is another one.
Absolutely.
Lingering Souls, Path to Exile, Inquisition. That kind of thing.
Yeah, just like they're willing to stuff money in these uncommon slots. Like, I think they only made one mistake with the uncommon slots.
What's that?
And they missed a very obvious inclusion, which was Kitchen Fix.
Oh, I think that there are some more missed ones, and we'll talk about that in a moment here.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. But yeah, I think Kitchen Fix was a good, solid uncommon pick that they could have printed, and I think they just missed.
I think that maybe Kitchen Finks was a consideration, but given that this set has an archetype of blue-white blink for draft, the whole restoration angel blink plan was maybe too strong to have Kitchen Finks floating around in Uncommon. We've got like momentary blink effects and things in that archetype. Deadeye Navigator. I mean, that's completely fair.
Yeah, and I'm just going to look at it from the, you know, from the online version. Kitchen Finks $4. You know, that's, it's not a backbreaker on online, but Kitchen Finks I think is a little rough in real life. It's a $12 Uncommon. So I think that would have been a really good spot for them to slam Kitchen Finks.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so let's look at the top losers. Losers being a good thing in this case. We're talking about cards that have lost value and are have become more affordable as a result of Modern Masters. And this is thanks to MTG Goldfish, which is like a great source of this sort of information. Absolutely. Damnation is down $9.50, $35. This is in paper. Linvala is down $8. Now is $18.65.
$7. Holy crap.
It was ridiculously expensive. That was like $40-$50 at the time that Birthing Pod was being played in Modern.
Wow, that's insane.
Liliana of the Veil has lost $7. Scalding Tarn is down $6 in paper. It's now like $70. Verdant Catacombs, two printings of it, are down $6. Arid Mesa is down $5. Another
two
copy,
printings of Verdant Catacombs. Is that the Expedition?
Yeah, it must be.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
And then must be the Expedition of Scalding Tarn is down $5 as well. Cavern of Souls is down $4, or down $5. Mystery Enforce is down $5. So some steady decreases along the way here.
Huge
we're getting to the point where things are going to be more affordable. You look at these percentages here. We're like, you know, losing 22%, 30%, 8%. You know, they're pretty significant changes. But here's the point I want to make with this, and we're not a finance cast, so I don't want to go too deep into this, but with all the benefits of Modern Masters and the affordability of these cards, is it worth it when the players treat it the way that we do, and we see the sets, and we decide what cards are not printed in the sets, and we just totally buy out cards like Karn Liberated, Through the Breach, Fulminator Mage, Ancestral Vision. And then we've got things like Karn Liberated gains $20, is up at $75 in paper.
Jesus.
Through the Breach gains $11, is $54 in paper. Mishra's Bauble was an obvious miss in this set. This is one of the uncommons I think they needed to include. Okay? Played in the biggest deck right now.
Holy
gain
God.
Gain $10 is now $39. It is an
$40
uncommon for $39.
Income.
What do you think it costs on Moto, by the way?
I'm going to guess 25 or 35 tickets probably, because it was 25.
Yeah,
last
30 tickets. 30 tickets online for an uncommon. That's $120 for a playset of Mishra's Bauble.
No
now,
thanks.
Here's the thing. This is purely based on like the reaction of the players. Wizards has no control over this other than to print these cards in their set. But they literally cannot include every Modern played card in Modern Masters 3.
So
what do you do?
It's a caveat. I present to you a caveat. They could put every single Modern playable card in Modern Masters 3.
They could. Okay.
They would have to not make it a draft format.
Yeah, well, and then that's the thing, Daryl. They put every single Modern played card in Modern Masters 3. They're going to miss one or two, right? The same thing's going to happen. You can't hit everything, right?
Right, so you can't hit... Yeah, there are more than 250 cards. I'll agree with you. You can't hit all of them. But you can hit them in waves. And you can and analyze the format and say, you know, what cards have we already mass-produced that are affordable? Inquisition. Bolt. You know, Shocklands are okay right now. You know, look at the big hitters and say, all right, we need to put Tarmogoyf and Liliana and Snapcaster and Bob... and Mishra's Bauble and Chalice of the Void, and when you just put these in Modern Master sets until the end of eternity, until they're $20.
Yeah.
You know, so they could legitimately put every Modern playable Magic card in a set and cycle them through, you know, these ones don't get included, these ones do, until you drop the prices on things. But then you would lose what a lot of people find as a big boon in these Master sets, which is it's a fun draft format. Because you couldn't draft a format where, like, you had, like, Damnation and Blood Moon and, like, no non-basics because, like, Blood Moon with no non-basics doesn't make any sense. And then, like, Ranger of Eos with no fetchable one-drops.
Sure.
And stuff like that. So you can't, like,
But would that put as many cards in circulation? I mean, that's the whole idea, is that we're getting these cards in circulation because people are opening them for drafts, right?
I mean, I think that if you chalked this thing full of value and could keep MSRP down, then yes, people would open boxes. People would buy the product and open it. Now, like, if you could somehow monitor that stores aren't selling them for markup, so that they get to the hands of the consumer at what MSRP is.
Here's the other thing. Here's the other way to level the playing field on this one. And maybe this is not an actual solution, but the way I see it is this. There are players, and this is also a suggestion at the same time, from a player's perspective who doesn't want to get screwed by this, who doesn't want to get blindsided by this. Like, say you're someone that's looking to build Tron, and you're waiting to see if maybe Karn Liberated gets printed in this set before you buy the cards for your deck, right? You don't want to spend the money on the card. You don't want to drop $25 on the Karn, or 25 tickets on the Karn. I don't know what it is in paper. I'm thinking Moto all the time. You don't want to spend the money on the Karn, right, to find out that it gets reprinted, and then it loses the value immediately after it's announced that it's reprinted, right? But if you do not do it, the card doesn't get reprinted, and it gains $20, and you're screwed, because now you've just added $80 to your playset of Karns that you need to pay for. So you've got to take a huge risk in that. So what you've got to do is you've got to really do some research. You've really got to keep your ear to the ground when these sets are coming out. And Reddit's a great source for that. You can use the MTG Finance Reddit, reddit.com/r/MTG Finance, and keep an eye on that, because even though it's just chock full of speculators waiting to strike and buy out cards that are not being reprinted, it's also full of players that are looking to not get screwed and not get left blindsided by this sort of thing. Like myself, there's a crowdsourced document where someone made an Excel spreadsheet with the set numbers for every card in Modern Masters, right? And as the cards got spoiled, they list the cards by color and by alphabetical order, and then they could kind of speculate as to what cards were left in between, you know, the alphabetical order that was, you know, like laid out. And so we could eliminate, you know, certain possibilities based on the number of mythics that we've already seen. Like, there were two black mythics spoiled, so all of a sudden Dark Confidant was out of contention. That was not going to be printed in Modern Masters.
Yeah, unless they put it in as a rare.
Unless they put it in as a rare, but it's a pretty surefire fire bet that it's not going to be seen. So immediately I'm seeing that, and I'm like, okay, I want to play Death and Taxes. I'm missing two Dark Confidants. I didn't want to buy them at first because I wanted to see if they're going to get printed. So I had to cash in on those guys. I bought them at $13. All right, now they're up to, I don't know what they are, probably $20 or something. Those kinds of opportunities let players, you know, like, sort of crowdsource that information. But also, as long as you're paying attention and keeping an eye on it, like, literally 24/7, because you know when these cards are going to be spoiled, you can, you know, get an edge on that. And the moment you find out that a card has been eliminated, you can strike on it, right? So it puts you at an advantage if you are, like, maybe a vendor, or like you are not working during the day. What is the solution to that? Well, can you get rid of the system of naming cards in alphabetical order and using the set numbers? Can you maybe spoil everything all at once? Can you hold something over the set numbers of the cards as you spoil them and reveal them at the end? Can you leave the format of having the same number of mythics and the same number of rares in the set? You know, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So that the information comes out to everyone at the same time, you know? And do we need to micromanage it that much? That's the other question. You know, what do you think?
So I look at it this way. It's really, so there's a functional piece of marketing that Wizards can do where, and that I saw a lot on Twitter where people were like, I got a preview card. People that I follow on Twitter who are just active people in the community. And it's really cool to be able to use that as a marketing strategy and say, hey, you know, Frank Laporte got a spoiler card and Joel Lissette got a spoiler card and LSG gets a spoiler card. So, you know, you get all these cool community people involved in spoiling the set and, you know, being really happy or really surprised by the card that's in the set. Uh-huh. And it's a really super functional and cool way to get the community involved. And, you know, different people you follow to get hype, you know, to different corners of the community. So that's really cool. And they lose that piece of marketing by not slowly spoiling the set.
Yeah,
and so
I love the way they spoiled it.
Yeah. But it does buy into your problem that you spoil a set like this and people don't know what they're getting. And so it's a gamble. So could they not do spoilers like that? Absolutely. They could put the set list and lock it in a safe, and everybody that works on the set has an NDA. So, you know, if you violate your NDA, you get fired, you get sued, and move on with their day.
But so, the question is then, if you were to spoil everything all at one time, does that even solve the problem, or does everyone just strike the moment that that set is being spoiled? You know, I mean, you can make an announcement and say, at 5 o'clock Eastern time, the set will be released, and it comes out. You know, inevitably with Wizards, every time that happens, it gets leaked an hour and a half early, right? Something happens, yep. We find out.
And then you so, like, as a company policy, you could go after the people and sue them very aggressively and show people that we aren't going to put up with that, and people will stop doing it. That's sort of a Pavlovian principle that's kind of over the head of our discussion of how do you manage this to keep people from spiking prices. But that's the thing. So the question then becomes, you know, if we're going to do this, how do you prevent spikes? Wizards can't do that. So it's one of those things that the community will inevitably say these cards got missed and we're short on them. Spike things and just buy stuff.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, the best way to – the rising tide will pick up all boats if they just release everything at once, and then the consumers will spike things simultaneously while the other cards could drop. But it might – everyone might let the cards drop in fear of their cards being reprinted. So you create a very volatile secondary market. So I don't know what the best strategy is. If it's to create a volatile secondary market – and just let it go, or to let everything spike simultaneously, or to continue doing what they're doing. I think what they're doing is fine, because then when you do release important cards, if they're printed already, their price goes down. So I don't know. It's a really hard thing to manage.
It is tricky, and I'm not really sure. And I don't want to say that there's necessarily anything wrong with the way that Wizards handled it, because I really do love the way that they spoiled things. In fact, I thought it was hilarious the way that they, you know, some of their spoilers were kind of like little jokes and jabs.
So,
Brian Kibler, for example, had Bonfire of the Damned as his spoiler.
Yeah, that was great. That was 100%. Yes.
And the way that it comes out over the course of the week and you, like, different community members get involved in it, that's ingenious. You know, that's beautiful.
Like,
that's the way that you create the community.
It was funny. They made fun of themselves for taking too long to reprint damage.
Right.
Like, they gave Jolas at Terminus.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and like, he I knew Terminus was coming out because I followed Joe on Twitter, and he's like, my preview card is very me, and I had to look at the card and figure out if it was the original art. But you think I would know that since I've signed so many of this damn card.
Yeah.
Like, oh, it's Terminus, or Entreat. And he's like, oh, it's actually the original art. And I was like, yeah, okay, so it's Terminus or Entreat. And so you knew that Joe, like, was spoiling the Miracle card, which is cool. So, like, you could sort of do some mental calculus and say, well, if they give Joe Entreat or Terminus, they're probably going to put the other one there. And then, you know, Bonfire of the Damned might make its way in there, and Devastation Tide, and Banshee Stroke. So they're saying, we're going to put Miracle in this set. So now you open the door to see, well, Temporal Mastery could be in it, and this could be in it. So, like, you kind of put pieces of the puzzle in there so people know that these are other cards that could be printed.
Yeah.
And so I really like stuff like that. It's really cool. It's really funny. Makes me laugh. I love it. And so I don't want them to go away from that. But right, it does make it hard.
Well, I think the takeaway from this is just be aware of it as a player. I mean, obviously there's not an easy solution for this. There's not much that Wizards can do. It's a cultural shift, you know. I mean, it exists. This culture of speculation and buying out cards and purchasing cards in bulk when you think that you have financial gain on them exists, you know, and it's not something that we can really, like, get over, because there are players in the game and there are people that just, you know, want to make money off the game involved. And for better or for worse, right? You know, to each their own. But I think that what we need to know as a player is that those things are going to happen, and you need to be, like, on your toes about it. And when this stuff is coming out, as soon as you have all the information you have, you've got to act. You can't wait, you know? You can't you can't wait to strike. I think I've waited too long already on my Noble Hierarchs. That was on my top five wish list, and I think I made that clear last week that I needed to acquire a couple of those. Those guys are up to like $30 right now. There are a couple of cards. Here's a few more that have not been included in the set that you might want to keep an eye on. They haven't gained too much yet, but Crucible of Worlds is not included in Modern Masters, is up $3. Dark Confidant, I mentioned, is up $3. Goryeo's Vengeance, up $2.55. Engineered Explosives, up $1.36. And Thoughtseize, up $1.28. I expect all five of those to steadily increase over the next couple weeks.
I don't think Thoughtseize really needed a reprint based on its so recent reprint.
I don't think it did either, but I do expect the effect of Modern Masters like 3 to boost.
These other four cards, I don't really see spiking too hard. Dark Confidant is pretty stable. It has been for a while. Crucible Worlds, it's not really played much outside of EDH. It's played as a one-of in some decks, plays as a one-of in some legacy decks, plays as a one-of in some vintage decks. I don't really see it spiking harder than it's just like the copies are. But I see it doing what most older limited cards do that are played in multiple formats, which is to just continue its steady rise. So I don't think you're going to see like spiky things. Goryeo's Vengeance, I think, is just so narrow in Modern. It's only played in one deck in combination with Crystal Brand. I don't see it doing anything spiky. and Engineer Explosives is one of in a lot of sideboards, two of in a lot of sideboards. But it's also, again, just played in all the formats as one of or two of in sideboards. So it's going to do that general spike, that general incline, instead of, you know, something like going up $12 like Card Liberty.
I can see them all. They all have kind of different functions. For example, Goryeo's Vengeance is kind of like the centerpiece of a deck, though. You know, that deck happens to see play, and that card's going to take a hit. You know, that card's going to go up. But it's a card that the deck can't do without. You know what I mean? And that kind of leads me to my next point. I want to kind of look in this set, and there are a lot of archetypes that this set like really, really supports. For example, you take a look and you see that we've got Liliana, we've got Tarmogoyf reprinted in Modern Masters, we've got Inquisition, we've got the fetch lands in Zendikar. Junk and Jund are in pretty good shape if you're interested in building those decks. You can almost draft a Junk or Jund deck.
So, like, between the Junk and Jund decks that you see, you have Terminate, Abrupt Decay, Voice Resurgence as the big multicolored cards in this set.
Yeah.
Path to Exile, Lingering Souls, Tarmogoyf, Liliana, Fetchlands. That's a lot of the price of most of both of those decks.
Now, you know, if a lot of people move in on the deck, though, that's the thing that you've got to be aware of as a player. What's going to take a hit? Now, what's missing, though? The man lands, right? Raging Ravine. Raging Ravine is gonna be affected by that. If we have more people, as a result of Modern Masters 3 being available, moving in on Junk and Jund, more people are going to need Raging Ravine, and it's not reprinted in this set, so I expect that card
to go up. I can tell you cards that are going to take a steady increase because of this. Blooming Marsh and Twilight Marsh.
Now, Twilight Mire, is that getting played? I think Blooming Marsh kind of takes its place in that deck.
Twilight Mire, it might not be getting played, but it's still like $30.
Sure. Well, Collective Brutality. I wonder if that one might
see. It's like $6.
Yeah, I think that Collective Brutality is a good trade for right now. It's really not seeing too much play in Standard, but it's certainly like got its value because of Modern. While it's in print, get your copies. That's going to be a Modern staple for a long time.
Let me see if I can find Twilight
Mother
here.
Here's another one. This is kind of interesting. While you're looking for that, if you look at the Modern Masters 3 reprints, Storm is another deck that you can build pretty readily. And yeah. Storm is like has taken a total facelift lately. I don't know if you've checked this out, but this
the Baral Gift Storm,
it doesn't even play Pyromancer Ascension. This is a really sweet deck. I threw this together on Moto this last week to kind of give it a shot because right now, like online, man, I had like nearly all the cards for it with the exception of like the Baral's and like the Passing Flames, which are now much cheaper because they're reprinted in Modern Masters. The deck does not rely on the graveyard. You can do without the graveyard because it doesn't have to, it doesn't need to trigger the Pyromancer's Ascension. Now, graveyard strategy helps. The graveyard strategy helps because you want to be Passing Flames you know, copying your like metamorphos and things out of the graveyard. Yep. But you can do without it. You know, you can storm off of your Goblin Electromancer or Brawl plus like a bunch of rituals.
So, yeah, Remand draws you two cards. I'm sure there are some number of Remands in that deck.
Yeah, there are three Remands, yep.
Yeah. So like things you can do with that. So the things you can do with that is like if you have a bunch of floating colored mana, you can Remand your spells to draw to double cantrip off them and then recast your spells. It's also insanely good with your mid combo you can do small grape shots. So like grape shot for six, Remand it, draw two cards, see if you can find some gas to keep going. Like if you're not short on mana, if cards are your object. So then you can up the storm count to seven, you still got mana, you draw two cards, you might find something to continue. So I think Remand is a very good, especially with so many guys that make your spells cheaper, especially if you have Brawl in play. You know, that goes to red, blue. So cast Metamorphos for a red, make red, blue, cast Grape Shot for six, maintain priority, Remand the original Grape Shot, they take five, you draw two cards, and you get to keep going.
Yeah, man, it's a fun deck to play. Just like talking about the sequences, it's like, you know, kind of like operating a puzzle, you know?
Yeah.
Unfortunately, it's kind of like not interactive. So no, if you like operating a puzzle and ignoring your opponent, it's a good choice.
big fan of ignoring my opponent. don't like people. Big fan of ignoring them.
But the reason I bring this one up is because there are a couple of cards in here that I think are notably discluded from Modern Masters 3 that if this is a deck that a lot of people are going to move in on because of all the availability of Pass in Flames, Gifts Ungiven, Serum Visions, Sleight of Hand and Metamorphos are two major centerpieces of this deck that are not in Modern Masters 3 that are going to be affected. And let's take a look here. Sleight of Hand right now is pretty affordable. So if you're ever considering building this deck, you might as well get your 39-cent copies of Sleight of Hand. Even though it's got plenty of printings, I can see that one going up. Metamorphos, on the other hand, is like already $250. So you may have missed the bus on that one.
Yeah. But, but anyways, on that Twilight Meyer statement.
Yeah.
Which play it as a one of in Jund decks and stuff like that. But it is $30 in real life.
Wow.
So it's like, if you look at the filter lands in real life, it's like most of them are like $10 or $11 or like a little less than that. And then like the blue, white, and the blue, red ones are like $12. And then there's like Twilight Meyer at $34. So like, what the hell?
Yeah, that's nuts. Probably because you want the double black for Liliana on those decks. You really need that, opportunity.
It also turns just like basic forest into Abrupt Decay.
Oh, sure.
Or basic mountain.
Yeah.
Or basic mountain. Sorry, basic swamp. But it does a lot of things that the deck wants to do. But yeah, but I can see your statement that Bloomy Marsh is taking that over. But it might be Bloomy Marsh is taking that slot over just because it's a whole lot cheaper.
Yeah, could be. I think in a lot of cases, like if we're talking about playing like Lilianas and things, like you only need three lands. There aren't a lot of spells in that deck that cost more than three.
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I 100% agree. No. It kind of sucks to draw Bloomy Marshes when you're on the Raging Ravine plan, but like.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah,
I think it's fine. So any other thoughts on Modern Masters 3? Anything? Are you going to run out and buy a box?
I'm not going to buy a box. I guess I'm kind of like cashing out in paper at this point. I'm kind of trying to move in on the online situation because I've got much more availability to play.
I'm feeling the same way about it. Like I'm just like, I don't even know if I want to buy paper cards anymore. I just kind of want to play. Like I might buy paper cards to be able to play like in EE6s and like all the like proxy vintage events that are out here just to play vintage in paper because it's fun. But I don't really want to play modern in paper anymore.
Yeah.
I might move all my modern stuff and try and just pick up power. And so I have a vintage deck and I can just move on with my deck.
Yeah, there you go. You do that.
It's
a real treat to like play in paper every once in a while when you're used to playing online, though, just to like actually hold the cards. It's like, wow, these are bigger than I remember.
I like playing EDH in real life. So I do want to play a fun game with four cards in the set, though. And it's art based. So
okay, what's that?
So which art you like the most?
Okay. Cool.
I'm going to start with Stony Silence, new art, old art.
Yeah, why did this one get new art?
I'm not 100% sure, but I like the new art better. What do you think, new art or old art?
I think that I like the new art better, too. Maybe the old art already has this kind of feeling. It was like kind of a bulk rare when it was in standard, so I kind of had this like bad taste in my mouth from like, oh, it's another Stony Silence in a pack. And now I know it's not. Now I would love to see Stony Silence in a pack, but this new art is pretty sweet.
Nice. I mean, so we both agree new art. Yeah, second new card art. Is Ranger of Eos. Old art or new art?
This new art's pretty badass. Definitely this new art.
Yeah, I'm a huge, giant fan of that. So I'm going to skip Past and Flames because the Past and Flames are just gas, so it doesn't matter. So third card is Snapcaster Mage. RPTQ art, old art, new art.
Actually, I like the RPTQ art the most, but between this and the old art, this one's kind of lame. It's really generic.
I'm just a huge fan of Mega Man, but this would be my second. I like this just like... It's got a very Jace feel to it, and I like a lot of the Jace arts just because they're so well done. And so one more, and I think I already know your answer, but I'm asking anyways. Terminate, old art, new art. Like there's three arts. There's there old art, the Alara Reborn art, or the new art.
Huh. Let me look at that one. There's actually four arts because there's a full art promotional version of that.
That art is absolute hot garbage. That's why I didn't consider it.
I don't know. This new art is pretty awesome. I like this new art.
I'm a huge fan of the original Terminates, of the dragon just getting shot out of the air over a volcano.
Yeah, that one's cool. They're all good art for Terminate. Nothing bad with that one.
That was fun. I just wanted to do something fun.
Isn't there more? I thought there was one more in here. Cavernous Souls. What about that one?
Oh, yeah. New art, 100%.
Yeah, that is badass, that Cavernous Souls art.
Not even close.
I'd like to see that on a playmat.
Yes.
Because I feel like it's beautiful, like if it was blown up.
Absolutely. But yeah, that's fun to do, just new art or old art. It's kind of cool. I like it when they put new art on stuff.
Yeah, and that's another thing that's worth noting. A lot of these cards are the invitational cards, like Snapcaster and Ranger of Eos. You're never going to see those printed with the old art again.
Yeah.
So like that, the Tiago art on the Snapcaster, the original Snapcaster, is not coming back. So
I just like the Mega Man art. It looks really cool. It looks like Mega Man.
Which one is the Mega Man? The original one?
Yeah, the old one. If you look at the old Snapcaster Mage, it looks like Mega Man. It looks like he has a blaster arm.
Oh yeah, that's right. He does have a blaster arm.
Yeah. So it just looks like Mega Man, and I really like the Mega Man art on Snapcaster Mage.
Too bad they didn't bring back the old art on the Tarmogoyf.
Ooh.
That'd be
I'm not a fan. I like the new art.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So, okay. I think we had one last thing you wanted to cover. I'm really interested in it, too.
Yeah, I think this could be a really short conversation, but what's that?
VR updates.
Next week on Monday is another banned and restricted update announcement, and there is lots of speculation about this set, being that this could be an opportunity for Wizards to reprint a card that's coming off the banned and restricted list so that it has more availability when they reprint it and the demand is increased. Now, we didn't see anything on the banned and restricted list get reprinted. Is there anything in Modern Masters 3 that maybe hints at a banned and restricted list update?
Okay, I kind of want to tackle this in all formats. All
right.
So let's just start from the top, standard.
All right, start with standard. Anything needs to get banned in standard?
Anything
need to come off the list in standard?
I don't think anything needs to come off the list. Actually, I'm torn that I think Reflector Mage could come off, but I think it's too good in the Saheeli deck.
Yeah. I don't think the Saheeli deck needs that, but I've heard people argue that Reflector Mage would do a good job of breaking up the green-black decks.
Yeah. So I think if Saheeli got banned, I think you could bring back Reflector Mage.
Sure.
I think people would be less incentivized to play Felidar Guardian because it's just a really crappy 1/4 at that point.
Is there any chance that Felidar Guardian or Saheeli gets banned?
I don't think there is, but like I think if you wanted to point at cards that could get banned in Standard, I think there are exactly two.
Man, they would really shake player confidence in Standard if they banned anything at this point.
Yeah, I think there are exactly two cards that you could ban in Standard.
I know what you're talking about.
And that's Saheeli and Walking Ballista.
Yeah, man, I could see it.
As much as I want to say snakes, it's walking ballista.
But if Saheeli gets banned, walking ballista loses a lot of its impact. It's
I mean, card's still insanely powerful for standard. Sure. Like, it's just a big body that with snakes gets even bigger, and with the green Gear Hulk is just an insane, like, 7/7 beater that turns into, like, Lava Axe Plus.
Yeah.
So I think that, like, its strength in the mid-range games is just so insane that I think you couldn't, like, I think you could argue a Walking Ballista ban, and I would say that you're not stupid.
All right. I could see that.
All right. Modern.
No changes.
I mean, I have two changes that I want, and I want for the entirety of the modern.
Yeah.
And they're really, really simple, and I don't know why we haven't got them yet, which is ban fucking Mox Opal and ban fucking Simeon Spirit Guide. I hate those cards. We don't need fast mana in this format. Chromebox was freaking good. Get these two cards the hell out of here so we can move on with our lives.
Yeah, dude.
Sorry, I'm just really passionate about these two cards being way too good for modern. Like,
Logar Grace. I agree with that.
Way too good for modern because it provided you too much free mana too fast. Like, draw sixes are really powerful, and then draw sixes that provide you 3 or 4 or 5 mana and three to five mana, if not more, in free mana when you would get, like, an Archimedes that gets back the 3/3, the Prize Amalgam. You know, getting 5 free mana for just having a card exist in your graveyard. It's too strong.
Yeah.
And so, like, I have a really strong hatred for cards that give you a bunch of free mana. Like, other cards that could definitely get banned the hell out of them and I wouldn't care are, like, Through the Breach and Goryeo's Vengeance.
Yeah, we don't need that shit in modern.
Because Goryeo's Vengeance gives you 6 to 13 mana.
Yeah.
And so, Through the Breach is less of a mana thing as much as it is a resiliency thing. Like, when you're trying to put Primal Titans into play, you cast Through the Breach, they have to counter that spell. And if they don't, they eat a Primeval Titan. And if they do, you just untap and cast a Primeval Titan. And they have to have another counter spell. So, the inherent, like, redundancy that card gives a Primeval Titan deck or an Emrakul deck when they're trying to just, like, all right, I'm going to pretend to put this card into play. And if you don't, I'm just going to put the actual card into play. I think that redundancy is a little strong.
Yeah.
It's not like... So I could see keeping Through the Breach just because it's 5 mana, especially if you get rid of Simeon Spirit Guide. But I can't see keeping Gorgeous Vengeance just because it's so much free mana.
It's not... it's certainly not a topic of discussion right now, and I haven't seen a Gorgeous Vengeance deck place recently. I think that would just be like stomping them while they're down right now. It's not going to happen.
But I think for the health of modern, you have to get rid of the things that give way too much free mana.
Yes, but the Wizards doesn't do that when it's just at the expense of the players that play those decks. I don't think that you're going to... I don't think that the pros and cons of this are in the favor of WotC. You know, like, we're going to lose... X number of players because they play that deck. Are we going to gain this many players back because they quit Magic because of that deck existing? Probably not.
Man, I understand. I'm just saying that if you want to make a healthy modern with this BR list, like, I think you just need to get rid of the three like very obvious fast mana cards.
No, I agree with you. You know, I kind of thought I saw this Revolt Zoo deck show up, and we talked about that last week, I think, or maybe
Burning Tree Emissary.
The Burning Tree Emissary x8 deck. And I thought that this was going to be it. I thought this was the Four Horsemen of the Apocalypse bringing the end of Simeon Spirit Guide because this deck was just going to run over modern, you know? And there's a chance that it just might. It might happen, right? Because this deck takes advantage of that fast mana. And it only played 2 Simeon Spirit Guides at first, but I could see it just going balls to walls, 4 Simeon Spirit Guides, just trying to play like 16 lands and 4 Simeon Spirit Guides and just like doming you on turn 1.
Body people.
And I hope that happens so that could finally be the straw that broke the camel's back.
Yep, I agree.
But I don't think it's going to, unfortunately.
I don't think there will be any changes. I agree with you. But I think for a healthy modern, there are 2 changes they should certainly make and 2 changes that they should discuss.
Yeah, someone tweeted Aaron Forsythe about unbanning Jace, and he said, we'll bring it up at our next discussion. No. But I think that was kind of like a humoring them answer, and not so much like an actual, we're going to do that
here's the thing with Jace. Jace is completely fair, air quotes, for modern.
Yeah.
Like, when you look at people just killing you on turn four, Jace completely fair. The problem with Jace is that if I let Jace be a thing, why would anyone play a finisher other than Jace? It does the same thing to Splinter Twin did in the format. Like, why would anyone kill you in any way other than Splinter Twin when they have Splinter Twin as a blue? Like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, the Grixis control decks get to jam a bunch of Jaces. And they can trim on Delve guys or not have to play like awkward creatures. And it's like, all right, I got Jace. Or like your Esper Drago decks don't have to play like the really crappy White Sun Zenith. They just get to play a bunch of Jaces. And so then you're just buried in cards and you're just like, well, great. I love Jace. Thanks, Wizards. And like Jace as a card, it's $50 right now. It got dropped by a couple printings.
Yeah.
But like you unban Jace in modern. And I'll tell you what, I'm goddamn glad I have my playset of Jace's because that card will be $200.
Yeah.
Because people will make a giant rush on trying to get Jace's because everyone that's going to play blue is going to want to play Jace. So I think that Jace on a power level perspective is completely fine for modern. Jace as a magic card is horrible for modern because it stifles diversity, which is something that Wizards doesn't want to happen, and that's why they banned Birkin Pond's player plan. So, No, they're not going to unban Jace. And if they do, sweet, I'm going to figure out how to break Jace.
There was a... I don't know if you saw, there was a fake spoiler for Splinter Twin printed in Modern Masters 3 as an uncommon.
I didn't see it. I saw none of the spoilers.
It actually caused a spike in Splinter Twin.
Lol.
Yeah. So as an uncommon too, which is hilarious.
Lol.
0%. That was the perfect thing to kind of take advantage to distract you from the fact that that was never going to happen.
Yeah, 0%.
But that was one of those ones that it was kind of like an unjust banning. It was kind of like falsely accused of its wrongs. Like it was like Wizards just saying, let's shake things up before this Pro Tour to make things interesting, and not so much like Splinter Twin needed the act. And they kind of admitted that. So I can see that one day coming off the list. I don't think now's the time. Modern's healthy.
I think Twin needed the axe.
Yeah.
I do. Because like blue decks weren't dominant. But for all your blue decks to look to have the same like 30 cards as a shell, it says bad things about the blue decks that they're only like 8 playable blue cards.
Yeah, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
That's not a message you want to promote, that like blue is only playable in really dumb strategies. Otherwise, there's like 8 playable cards. Like that's not a good message for your player base.
Yeah, that's
fair. I think to expand the blue card base, they banned Splinter Twin.
All right,
Legacy.
I cannot offer much on that front, but what do you think?
Sensei's Divine Tom.
This conversation keeps coming up, huh?
Every time. Like, and I'm a Miracles player. I love playing me some Miracles. Goddamn, some people just don't. Just should not be allowed to play Sensei's Divine Top, dude. It's atrocious how slowly people spin Sensei's Divine Top. Like, if you could get a license to say you're allowed, I would be cool with Sensei's Divine Top existing. But they won't do that, so please just ban the fucking cards.
Yeah.
Vintage, I know you have nothing to offer. Restrictions.
What do you think?
Paradoxical outcome.
Oh, really?
The card is super rail busto. Like, if you resolve it, your opponent is straight up dead. Like, it's not even close how dead your opponent is. Unless you had just a god-awful hand. That deck is super weak to Null Rod and Stony Silence, which is a thing. Yeah. Like, but... And I think that Mentor needs a restriction. Like, if you look at all of the blue-based control decks, they revolve around, like, one of two cards, and that's Mentor or Leopold.
Leopold. That guy's crazy, I hear.
Yeah, I mean, like, and it might just be, you know, I might be being too aggressive with restriction of those cards. It might be that you need to restrict cards like Gush to break the shell around those cards.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, I don't think we'll see new creatures innovating and joining the vintage scene in those four colors, in those five colors. Well, that's all the colors. Because you have to look at your Jeskai deck or your Esper deck or your bug deck and say, all right, is this creature better than Monastery Mentor or Leovold? No? Then I can't cut a Monastery Mentor for it. And so I have to play four Monastery Mentors. And so then you're asking yourself, you know, is this creature better than having a Pyroblast or a Preordain, which just makes my Monastery Mentor better?
Yeah.
And most of the time the answer is no. Like, the only time I can see a creature that's really better than having, like, a Pyroblast or something is a Snapcaster Mage. So you have another spell for your Monastery Mentor. Or adjacent Drain's Prodigy. So you have another spell for your Monastery Mentor. Like, or splashing red in your bug deck for Dak Faden so that you can just abuse your opponent and make them discard cards with Dak Faden. Like,
yeah.
I don't particularly like the power of those two creatures and Paradoxical Outcome. So, like, Shops is a reasonable deck because Null Rod and Paradoxical are a thing. And so I don't think anything needs to go out of Shops. Dredge is just Dredge. It's atrocious. It's not really magic, but it's a thing. I don't care. There's no reason to restrict
it. I just pulled up a Dredge deck because I was looking at it and I was looking at the prices on these guys, and Dredge isn't the only affordable deck on this list. But it's atrocious, huh?
It's just Dredge as a mechanic and a deck is atrocious.
Yeah.
Like, I can see that. Like, you just look at this pile of cards and you're like, this is just bullshit. Like, there's no reason this should be a thing at all. Like, this is just completely asinine. It's not that the deck is bad. The deck is very good. You have to devote, like, eight of your sideboard slots in Vintage to beating Dredge because it's just that hard to beat. And you usually never win a game one against Dredge. Unless you're playing, like, Trinket Mage, so you can go get one of the zero or one mana artifacts that locks your opponent out of having their graveyard, like Grafdigger's Cage or Nihil Spell Bomb or something like that. And so, like, the Eldrazi decks play, like, the white Eldrazi decks play triple mainboard containment priests so that the Dredge deck's creatures can't come into play. And then if they do get into play, they can flicker them with Eldrazi's Placer and they never come back. Mm. Like, Dredge is just, like, the fact that it exists in the form it does is atrocious. Because, like, that pile of cards is they're all awful, but you put them all together and you slap a Bazaar Baghdad into play and your opponent's just like, God damn it, I'm just dead on turn three. And sometimes it's way sooner than that. Like, if you just Dredge Insane and find Dragonlord Kolaghan, your opponent's just dead on turn two.
Yeah.
Because it's something like, activate Bazaar, discard my dredgers, untap, during my upkeep, activate Bazaar, discard my dredgers, you know, and dredge like 18, and then draw and dredge 6 more, or draw dredge 18 total, and if you find like a couple Narc Amoebas and Dragonlord Kolaghan and some bridges, your opponent is just dead. Yeah. It's so, real dumb.
So do not play Dredge.
No, I mean, it's real good, but just know that if you look at the sideboard of a Dredge deck, it's just 15 anti-hate cards.
Yeah.
You're just like, maybe 4 Leyline of the Void for the Dredge Mirror, and then like 11 cards of how do I beat my opponent's hate. Whether that be, I guess I'll board in some Nature's Claims, but I don't want to get Mental Misstep, so I'll play some Abrupt Decays.
Sure, sure.
But I don't want to get like randomly misdirected, so I'll play some Wisp Mares and some Ingot Chewers. Like, your sideboard is just all anti-hate cards. You don't have like meaningful sideboards. And some people just like board into the darkness combo. So that's a thing too. So I mean, like, the deck isn't bad. The deck is just like, it looks like a miserably awful pile of cards.
All right. So back to the original point here. The only thing that you want to see, what's your call for Vintage officially? You mentioned a couple of different things.
Gush and Outcome. Because I think if you ban Gush and Outcome, I don't think Leovold is broken, and I think taking Gush away from the Mentor deck slows him down a lot.
And then restricting Mentor, or no?
No, it restricts. It's all restrictions. Just restrict Gush.
Oh, okay, gotcha. All right, and then one last format that we should talk about is Pauper. And the reason that we should cover Pauper is because I don't know much about Pauper either, but I think it's worth covering. Mortician Beetle is printed in Modern Masters and is downgraded from a rare to a common. Mortician Beetle is one black for a 1/1 insect. Whenever a player sacrifices a creature, you may put a +1/+1 counter on Mortician Beetle. So this is a part of an infinite combo with Carrion Feeder. I can't remember the other cards in the combo, but it's like Carrion Feeder and maybe like, how does it work? There's one of the like persist creatures. Like it's a 1 and a green for a 2/2 persist.
1 and a green for a 2/2 persist?
Yeah.
Safehold Elite?
Safehold Elite, yeah. And there's one more piece. It's a 4-card combo. It's like totally ridiculous. So maybe it's terrible, but I think it has the inner workings of a pretty oppressive like green-black aristocrat-style deck that has like an infinite combo that makes your creatures like infinitely large. So I don't know. Do you think they're going to act on that preemptively, or they're just going to let it happen and see how it goes?
I think they're going to see if people move towards it.
Yeah, I would expect that too.
Yeah. I think they won't do a preemptive ban, but they will say, hey, you jerks, this is here. You rude about it. I'm going to ban it. You know,
it's kind of cool that they took a rare all the way down to common. There's a lot of commons in Modern Masters that are not going to be playable in Pauper that were never commons to begin with.
That's sweet. I love it.
So, yeah, that's a lot of fun. Makes Pauper exciting, doesn't it? You probably don't notice a lot of those things.
No, I don't. I'm not looking for them.
There are some rares in here that they brought down to uncommon, but very few that they go from rare to common. So there you go. All right. Well, that's all we got for this week. See you later.
Sweet. This is fun. Talk to y'all later.
Bye. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website, and if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.